It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farah. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a Wisconsin travel writer shares some of her must-do activities around the state, and you could share some of yours. First, according to new data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, there are record high levels of sadness, violence, and risk of suicide for teenage girls. According to the CDC, nearly 6 in 10 teen girls felt persistently sad or hopeless in 2021, twice the rate of boys. Almost 2 in 10 experienced sexual violence, and 3 in 10 seriously considered attempting suicide at some point. Our next guest says Wisconsin is seeing similar trends and healthcare systems are adapting to try to meet the mental and emotional health needs of adolescent girls. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this something you're seeing in your own community, your own family? What do you think some of the reasons for these trends might be? What questions do you have our guest? What solutions do you see? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Allie Hurst is medical director of the Pediatric Emergency Department at UW Health Kids and assistant professor of pediatric emergency medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Hurst, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks much for having me.
Now, these new numbers came out from CDC with their most recent data year, 2021. I understand you've already been seeing similar concerns in your work as a pediatric emergency specialist. What are you seeing?
So it's pretty shocking the number of children now presenting with not only suicidal ideation, but attempts, and just mental health crises overall in general are increasing. We, as an emergency department, have seen the most shocking and the most evident change and increase in visits in the 0 to 13-year-old group, like 0 years old to 13 years old, which a lot of people I don't think consider, especially based on the fact that as kids get older, between the 14 and 17-year-old group, that's usually when you're starting to see adolescent rebellion and things that can cause them to be more reactive and more upset. But our increases are showing that younger and younger children are having more of these crises. And in fact, from 2020 to 2022, our numbers of 0 to 13-year-old patients increased by 77% for mental health crises alone. And many of those had needed just outpatient treatment or received just outpatient treatment, while about 34% of those received inpatient psychiatric treatment for their complaints.
Looking at those CDC numbers, we see an increase in the pandemic years, but also a steady increase in these concerns and these numbers leading up to 2020. You just mentioned 2020 to 22, right smack in pandemic years. Do you see this as a problem that was on the rise even pre-COVID?
Absolutely. And especially the fact that we are desperate for outpatient mental health resources and were before the pandemic. Now this massive increase has truly put a strain on our system, not only from a pediatric emergency department perspective, but also outpatient psychiatrists. They can't keep up with the amount of demand that there is for their subspecialty. And so a lot of the overflow of patients who can't get care outpatient end up in the emergency department, which unfortunately or fortunately is not the best place for mental health treatment, especially if it's not an emergency. If it's not true suicidal ideation with a plan, sometimes we aren't able to deliver the perfect care, psychiatric care for children. We do our best. We are absolutely the place. If you don't know what else to do, we are absolutely the place to go to. But we're really struggling in terms of getting these kids the care they need. And absolutely, it started before the pandemic. It's just been exponentially exacerbated by the fact that we were completely isolated during the pandemic itself.
One thing I wonder, is there maybe some good news here that maybe a problem that might have been ignored or not taken as seriously in the past, or there was concern about stigma? Now maybe people are taking this more seriously and seeking care when they wouldn't have before. I'm digging for the slightest of silver linings here. Is there any sign that that might be the case?
That's a really interesting question, actually, because part of the problem we think is actually social media. But at the same time, a lot of kids actually reach out when they are having mental health problems on their social media. I've had a lot of kids brought to the emergency department by 911 because their friends saw them overdosing on pills or trying to commit suicide online, and then they got help they needed. So it's a double-edged sword in that social media is incredibly isolating, but at the same time, I agree with you. I do think it's actually caused a lot more people to be open about it, whether or not they intended to be in some of those cases. It's definitely gotten some kids the help that they needed when you're right. There wasn't a way for us to find out beforehand.
We're talking to Dr. Allie Hurst, medical director of the Pediatric Emergency Department at UW Health Kids, looking at rises in concern about a mental and emotional well-being and health for teen girls, as she mentioned, preteen girls as well. She has seen this in her own department. New CDC numbers also confirm it. You could join in with your thoughts, your questions for our guest at 800-642-1234. If this has been a concern in your family and you're willing to talk about it, we would love to hear from you. If you found ways to help, love to hear that too at 800-642-1234. Dr. Hurst, let's talk about some of the possible reasons behind this. And let's start with social media. You mentioned that as a possible at least contributing factor here. What are you seeing?
So a lot of the information that we're gathering is from teenagers that often don't want to talk about it to us directly. So it can be really difficult to discern whether or not where the exact pressures are coming from. The Washington Post article that came out last month was very interesting in pointing out that a lot of the beauty expectations of young girls especially is not within realm of anyone attaining. And it's interesting also because social media, the algorithm that's made to create it to be addictive, actually focuses then on the same type of content. So if you look at one picture or one video of somebody that's thin and has everything that they ever want in life, it is going to continue to show you the exact same thing, but more of it with different people. And so I think that in and of itself has been isolating for girls who there's an impossible beauty standard to achieve. And then the social media networks and the way that they're designed show you more of that. And so I think it's caused a lot of girls to feel desperate and that they can't attain any of these things, that it's social media's reinforcing that they should. So I think not only is that part of it, but they're also mimicking their parents because all parents are all on social media as well. And kids are like a sponge. As soon as they see someone that is a role model for them or one of their parents doing something, then they are also going to want to participate in it. Even young kids, like very young kids and toddlers, know how to use smartphones better than some adults do just because they're exposed to it constantly. So not only is it a modality that every child is now interacting with, but that it's also creating these divergent ideas of what true life is actually like based on what kids are seeing.
Are you hoping that parents approach social media in a particular way, whether that's a limiting or setting, you know, deadlines or saying not until age, whatever, or just having conversations with their girls in particular about social media?
I think everyone needs to have the conversation for sure. That's definitely something that, you know, when you're talking about the birds and the bees with your kids, that you should approach social media as well. A lot of sexual, not as particularly violence, but sexual abuse is actually happening online now. So even, you know, back in the 90s, when it was still like chat rooms, you had to be very careful on AOL chat rooms. It's the same today, but with every type of social media. Boys and girls are sending pictures to each other, whether it's solicited or not. And that's abusive. That is not helpful to anybody, and it makes people feel very uncomfortable. So having that discussion about safety on social media, limiting social media, and then mimicking that, doing what you want your child to do by limiting their own social media use, I think is the next step forward.
We're talking to Dr. Allie Hurst, medical director of the Pediatric Emergency Department at UW Health Kids. We're talking about the well-being of teen girls and an increase, according to CDC numbers, in rates of things like sadness and suicidal thoughts. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Is this something you're seeing in your school, your community, or your family? What do you think might be some of the reasons behind these challenges for teen girls and preteen girls as well? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. How do you talk about social media with your kids? Have you had that conversation? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Dr. Allie Hurst, medical director of the Pediatric Emergency Department at UW Health Kids. Talk about the emotional, mental, and physical well-being of teen girls. UW Health Kids reports a dramatic increase in mental health-related visits to their emergency department over the past decade. There's been a significant jump there since 2020, and new CDC data shows girls in greater danger than boys across almost all mental health measures and increasing concerns among all those measures. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your experiences, your questions for our guest. Let's bring on a caller now. Andrea is with us in Southwest Wisconsin. Andrea, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Andrea?
Well, when I was 13, I had a girlfriend spending the night, and just out of the blue, I said to her, I can't handle this anymore. I just can't handle it. And I swallowed a whole bottle of baby aspirin. And I thought that meant I was going to die, and I wanted to. So she called the emergency room, and they just laughed and told her to, you know, to put me to bed. She never told my parents. The hospital never followed through with it. And that's the only drugs I knew that were in the house.
Andrea, thank you so much for calling. I'm glad you're still with us. Can I ask Andrea about how long ago was this?
Well, 50 years ago.
Okay. Thank you again. I'm glad you're with us to share that unfortunate story. First of all, Dr. Hurst, I'm hoping an emergency room would react very differently than Andrea described there today.
I agree. I'm really sorry you went through that, Andrea. That sounds terrible.
And apart from, you know, the physical concerns there, what kind of treatment would an emergency room offer someone who had made that apparent suicide attempt that Andrea describes 50 years ago? What should an emergency room be doing in that instance?
So initially, we would check for medical stabilization. That is our first and foremost job, in fact, for anyone presenting to our emergency department. We would check labs. We would check the level of salicylate. So the active metabolite in aspirin that we look for are the salicylate levels. They can affect the kidneys very seriously. And then usually if the levels are high enough to create a toxicity in the body, we start a special mixture of fluids that helps to process the metabolite more quickly and to protect the kidneys. And usually it does mean an admission to the hospital at least overnight while making sure that the kidneys are still healthy and safe and that the metabolite clears.
And then apart from the physical well-being at that point, this is obviously a mental health concern. What would be the next steps there?
So in this day and age, we would consult our psychiatry team. We have a children's specific psychiatry team that would come talk to the patient and make sure that they do have all the safety requirements in place, or not even requirements, but if the patient does need admission based on the fact that they are having an active suicidal plan, then to probably admit them to a psychiatric facility in order to help them work through these thoughts and get them the care, the expeditious care that they need.
And finally, Andrea had mentioned, you know, this sensation that, in effect, the world was too much, and that's what led her to do this. Is this, I guess, a common story of people who, especially young girls who show up in emergency rooms?
I do think so, especially with the idea that there's nothing that they can do to change the trajectory of their lives, which, as, of course, adults know, having been through it, you can change the trajectory of your life. You can get help. It just doesn't feel like that, though, as an isolated teenager. And even 50 years ago, when Andrea was having these thoughts, things like that can feel so just uniquely an experience that you are going through yourself and nobody else. And so it can be very difficult to see to the future, especially when you don't think that there's anything that can help you.
Thanks again for sharing that story. Brian joins us now in Madison. Brian, hello.
Hi. I just had a question in regards to social media aspect that was brought up. I know you spoke about like beauty standards. I was wondering more on sort of the social justice side of things, not just major events like, you know, George Floyd or these recent earthquakes, but just how much more interconnected we are with seeing the real like miserable conditions that some people are forced to live with. That feels overwhelming to me. So I was just wondering if you're seeing that reflected in this younger cohort.
Brian, interesting question. Thanks for the call. Dr. Hurst, people's exposure to the bad things in the world.
You know, that is really interesting to think about because we do know minute to minute, second to second, what else is happening everywhere else. I haven't actually thought about that in terms of what our teenagers are seeing and how that might affect them. But I absolutely think you're right that seeing not only these impossible beauty standards, but then these overwhelmingly sad and horrific events happening in the rest of the world can also contribute to poor mental health and feeling like there isn't anything better that might happen in your lives or other people's lives. So I absolutely not, I don't have any data to support that, but I do absolutely think that that's probably contributing as well.
Thanks for the call, Brian. And Brian's point takes us to something else from this CDC report in terms of who is particularly vulnerable. And the CDC data talks about, for example, LGBTQ teens and their risks of mental health concerns. Is that something you are seeing in your practice?
Absolutely. Not only the LGBTQIA plus community, but also communities of color are being affected much more than white communities or other ethnicities and race. So it is something that we are actively trying to not only improve their well-being and improve how they're accepted in our community, but also to let them know we are there for them and that we do not want them to feel as isolated as they might feel, not only because of their communities or their schools or even on social media.
Thanks again for that call, Brian. We are talking to Dr. Allie Hurst with UW Health Kids, medical director there of the Pediatric Emergency Department, looking at mental health challenges, emotional challenges facing teen and preteen girls. CDC data shows things getting worse. Dr. Hurst's emergency room also seeing that. You could join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. We've talked, Dr. Hurst, about social media, about inequality in some ways. Are there other things you are looking at as possible causes of concern leading to these problems here, at least that you might want to see investigated more?
Well, especially the sexual violence and abuse that is happening in young girls as well. One of the things that I think is well underrepresented is actually how much online presence sexual violence has. And it does often then translate into in-person sexual violence that young teens are seeing. And I don't want to say it's just limited to teen girls. It's happening to young men as well. And those of the trans population. So it's something that I think needs a lot more, not only research into it, but also to report it more frequently. Something called sexploitation, which happens online, is basically blackmailing for sexual photos or videos. It's happening to many teens all over the place. It's way more common than people think. And being able to at least identify it, do research on it, and report it because it is a crime is something that we need to focus on a little bit better as well.
And I also want to focus for a bit on resources for that young girl after that emergency room visit. Dr. Hurst, you mentioned the resources aren't always there. What do we need to see around Wisconsin so that you can confidently send that patient on to get treatment they might need?
Absolutely. There are a lot of different facilities that are not only expanding their coverage in order to help these teenagers, but it's now been declared a national emergency in child and adolescent mental health. The entire country is on board with this now, realizing how big of an issue it is. Part of the things that we're trying to do to improve our resources and improve our outpatient reach is to not only decompress our inpatient facilities, so not only our psychiatric facilities, but even our pediatric hospital, we're trying to decompress those in order to be able to accommodate for those that are presenting with true suicidal ideation and plans or true suicide attempts. We're also trying to recruit more people into child and adolescent psychiatry and outpatient therapy in order to help strengthen not only our outpatient referral network, but also to allow for the huge upsurge of patients to get the care that they need.
Right. What kind of care, what kind of resources would you like to see out there, to prevent those emergency rooms visits in the first place, to get some help to people before they're in that acute crisis situation?
Well, I know a lot of schools are actually currently trying to connect a lot more mental health resources within the school itself, which I think would be incredibly helpful with the fact that everyone is back in person learning. You can identify suicidal ideation and risk much better when you're in person. And so identifying those kids when they are at school and then being able to get them either the expedited help they need through the emergency department or to be able to refer them outpatient, I think would be helpful. But especially what I want to see coming in the future and in the near future, especially, is to recruit more people that will do this type of care and will take care of these children so that they can reach out to them and not have to use the emergency department as their backup system.
Time for one more caller. Sarah is with us in Libertyville, Illinois. Sarah, hi.
Hi, thank you so much. So I don't have kids, but I've been a long-term sub with different ages, substitute teacher. And I've taught second grade and seventh grade, and both of those classes had trouble. The girls especially were very upset about animal torture videos that they found online.
Oh, goodness. Sarah, you're breaking up a little bit. I got the gist, Sarah. A teacher, if you didn't hear that part, Dr. Hurst, saying her students are seeing very disturbing videos online. Animal torture, I think she said. Dr. Hurst, again, a reminder for parents to help their kids and, you know, help keep them away from disturbing stuff.
Absolutely. And it's horrifying to know and be able to even see what is available online to watch. Part of the reason that we think sexual violence is increasing is also due to the accessibility of like pornographic websites to children. And so knowing that not only are there locks on their phones that you can create in order to prevent them from visiting sites like that and watching YouTube videos of that nature, but also to consider when is the right time to buy a smartphone for your child, whether or not they are mature enough to be able to process something and be able to know that that's not the right thing to do, and it can be really difficult to navigate. And something I would talk to your pediatrician or your family doctor about, in fact. There's more and more research coming out about when the right time might be for teenagers, not only based on family preferences, but also when your child is mature enough.
Dr. Hurst, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Dr. Allie Hurst is medical director of the Pediatric Emergency Department at UW Health Kids and assistant professor of pediatric emergency medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. She joined us for a look at the ways we can help improve the mental well-being of adolescent girls. You can always contact the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. If you're experiencing mental health-related distress or worried about a loved one who may need crisis support, you can call or text 988 to connect with a trained crisis counselor. 988 is confidential, free, and always available. Coming up after the news, if you think you've experienced all the must-dos around Wisconsin, our guest shares ideas from her new book of great things to do around the state, and you can add your suggestions as well. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, one of the toxic chemicals released in the East Palestine, Ohio train derailment is a key material for plastics production in the U.S. A Wisconsin engineer joins us for a look at how commonly it's used and how dangerous it can be. Now, when people come to visit Wisconsin, they ask, what can't miss things they should do here? There's a lot to choose from, ranging from the obvious and highly accessible to some lesser known places off the beaten path. And even for people who do live here, there's always something more to add to the list of uniquely Wisconsin places to go, sights to see, activities to do, foods to eat. Our next guest rounded up 100 great ideas. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What's on your Wisconsin bucket list? What are your top recommendations for visitors? If you've recently crossed something off your list, what was it? And when people come to visit you in your part of the state, what's the gotta-do thing there? Whether it's a sight to see, an experience, a restaurant, you name it, call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Danelle Gay is a TV host, travel writer, former chef, and author whose books include Midwest Road Trip Adventures. Her new book is called 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. Danelle, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me. It's fun to be here.
All right. You've got 100 things. You actually have more than 100 things because some of them like, you know, this kind of food. Yeah, here's some other restaurants too. So it's 100 plus. What did it take for something to make the cut as a must-do Wisconsin thing for your book?
Ooh, it was tough. I got 191 things in there, actually. So you're right. I managed to squeeze a few more gems of Wisconsin in. And I had a huge list to start with. But you kind of had to balance things out from the state, you know, kind of all over geographically. And I wanted to do a mix of some things that were like no-brainers. You have to eat a cream puff at the Wisconsin State Fair to some fun things that are more hinted gems. So it was a tough, delicate like balance to create.
Now, before we start visiting, you're doing something special with this book as you go around, and you're doing a lot of readings. And they're fundraisers in effect. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, actually, a lot of the places that are in the book that are nonprofits, when I go back to that area and I'm doing a book event there, the profits of the book that day are going back to that organization. So even the kickoff party for my book is going to be in Sun Prairie, and that night all the sales will benefit the Sun Prairie Emergency Food Pantry.
Now, I'm hearing a lot of love for Wisconsin. Where does that come from for you?
Well, I'm born and bred here. I'm a diehard cheesehead myself. So.
I will, for all listening, there is a Packers t-shirt involved here, I should point out.
Is there a different team? Really? No. So, yeah, I mean, I was born and bred here. It's just, it's in our blood, you know. And when I was at the Governor's Conference on Tourism last year, I learned that the travel industry in Wisconsin got less federal relief dollars for COVID than any other Midwest state. And that kind of made me look at finishing this book a little differently. And that's when I realized I can use this book to give back to a lot of different areas and communities in Wisconsin that weren't going to see the money to help rebuild their businesses after COVID shut things down for a while.
Talking to Danielle Gay about her new book, 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 to share your must-do, must-experience things around the state of Wisconsin, famous or not. Big or small, local, or you can find them all over the place. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. All right, now let's start naming some names. What I love to see there is Dr. Evermore's Forevertron. This is just for a point of trivia. One of the very first radio interviews I ever did was with Tom Every, a.k.a. Dr. Evermore. Unique character, unique thing. People in the art world really do come to Wisconsin to see and experience this. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Folk art is incredible. And you just really have to experience it in the element that it was created. We talked for a little bit privately about the Kohler Art Center in Sheboygan, and they have 35 samplings of different artists. But yeah, Forevertron, you just have to stand there at that place and kind of absorb it yourself. It's almost overwhelming, but it's so cool. You have to see it in person.
Excellent. Now, food and drink. Now, this is, talk about tough to narrow down. Let's see. You've got some Door County fish boil, and you picked one, and this is another one where you said, or, here's a whole bunch of others. Talk about the fish boil in Door County.
That's like dinner and a show built in. And I picked the one that, you know, I thought had the best show first, because that's the part you sit outside on the patio and you watch the master at work doing the fish boil, and they tell the stories and history of the area. And that's half of the fun. I mean, eating it is great, but it's really the show leading up to it in advance. But that's, again, that's another really cool Wisconsin experience.
That's Door County. What were some of the other great food traditions you wanted to highlight and then went looking for the right restaurant or venue to match them up with?
Well, you have to have a Kringle in Racine, because there's all the Danish people that settled there. Wisconsin, they have something called Booyah. It's a different kind of soup, and that's usually the area you're going to find it. So we had to look for that. You got to have Eat at a Wisconsin Supper Club. Mm-hmm. And the one that I featured, I mean, there's tons of amazing supper clubs, but I featured Cantafio's in Beaver Dam because they're a Gold Star family and they have a really neat story about what they do for veterans.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit.
Well, they're a Gold Star family. They lost their son Ryan almost 20 years ago. And so they do free meals for veterans. And on Memorial Day, they usually do a free feed, a free meal from 4 to 8. And that's when I'll be there this year signing books on Memorial Day. And we're going to donate the profits to the Wounded Warrior Project in Ryan's name. So they're an incredible family.
Other experiences that go along with foods that, I mean, there's the famous Goats on the Roof restaurant.
Oh, definitely.
Talk about that a little bit. Al Johnson's?
Al Johnson's. And that started out kind of as a gag where somebody brought the goats over to him. But I mean, you have to have the Swedish pancakes with the lingonberries there. That's just a given.
And then a $100 burger.
Oh, yeah. Madison's got the $100 burger, if you haven't heard about that one.
It's not the burger, though.
Not the burger, no. At the Jet Room, you can get the $100 burger. But that also then, beside your burger, it gets you a ride around Madison in a plane.
Right. Now, I've been there to the Jet, and this is like right next to the airport there.
Mm-hmm.
So you literally, people park their planes and walk in and get breakfast or whatever.
Oh, and they have a beautiful wall of windows where you can watch all the airplanes, you know, landing and taking off, too.
That was a great one for kids. Now, let's get to let's go to museums now.
Ooh.
How about that? You've got some great ones. Milwaukee, and I've talked to the directors there, the Black Holocaust Museum.
That was an amazing experience. When we toured that, I took my teenager and their best friend. And that's the first time I've ever heard two teenagers quiet for almost 2 hours.
Wow.
It was an amazing experience. How they put everything together, the journey that you walked through history was just amazing. And the conversations we had in the car afterward were incredible too. They have this one thing where you're like walking underneath and it's like you're in the hold of a slave ship where you're like looking up and just, I invite you to go there and lay down underneath there and look and try and imagine what it would be like to be there and have that your only view for like 3 months in the transport. It's an incredible museum.
And then for a kind of an opposite experience, I remember with little kids running around and making noise and having a lot, just being super excited, railroad museums here in the state. We've got a few places to experience those.
Lots of great railroad museums. And, you know, from 2 to 102, who doesn't like trains? One of my favorite museums, Racine, the Racine Art Museum, they have their Peeps exhibition coming in. They have people from all over the world who send in their artwork, and they've made it from Peep candies. It's hilarious.
A lot of people would say that's the best use for Peeps.
Well, they float nicely in hot chocolate.
I mean, I know some people like to eat them, yeah. Let's bring out a caller now at 800-642-1234. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hello.
Well, anyone in Madison would say take them to Old Brick Gardens.
The Botanical Gardens, sure. And Kay, I understand you've got one more to recommend to us as well?
Yes. Mater's German restaurant in Milwaukee for wonderful German food.
What's your favorite thing to eat at Mater's in Milwaukee, Kay?
Sauerbraten.
Okay, Sauerbraten. I used to be a big Rouladen fan when I'd go to German restaurants. So the Botanical Gardens, I can't remember if that ended up in the book.
It's hard because we have so many amazing ones in Wisconsin. Right. And like I said, you had to balance out the state. I mean, I could easily do 100 things in just Madison for this book, but I couldn't. Somebody else wrote that. The gardens that I did feature is the Janesville Rotary Gardens, because they have the 1.5 million holiday light display. That's their biggest fundraiser for the year. But I mean, Green Bay, Old Brick Gardens, there's so many amazing, amazing gardens that are, you know, available for us in Wisconsin. And it's funny that you mentioned Mater's, because I just got the contract to write Unique Eats and Eateries of Wisconsin. And that's one of the ones on my list of 84 to connect with. Okay. I agree. Mater's is amazing.
Okay. Thanks so much for sharing that. I appreciate that. And that highlights something else that kind of keeps coming up in your book. All the many ethnic traditions that Wisconsin has to draw from. That we've already talked about a couple of them. What are some more you might want to highlight?
Well, you know, amazing is a really amazing. Well, it's an incredible state for the fact that so many different ethnic groups settled here, everyone from the Swedes to the Germans, and then all of the different industries. We had a logging and a fishing and a mining. So it's just, depending on where you go, there's something different and incredible to focus on.
We'll go back to our callers now. Scott is with us on the road on his way to Milwaukee now. Scott, hello.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
Good. What did you want to recommend, Scott?
Well, I would recommend going to GaryCon, which is a Dungeons & Dragons convention held in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. It's online. You wouldn't have any trouble finding it, except that it takes up all of the Grand Geneva Resort and Spa. So it's a pretty big convention these days. But it's so much fun because all the great old school gamers show up there.
Scott, thanks a lot. We've talked about Lake Geneva's origin story for Dungeons & Dragons, this game that changed the gaming world. Thanks for sharing that with us, Scott. Donnell, any thoughts on that one?
I was trying to work on a book that we'd had like fairs and celebrations and, you know, things like that that we could put in. So I'm working with that with my Midwest Travel Writer Network group. We're doing a couple of different books together, too. But Lake Geneva is beautiful. And the Grand Geneva, I mean, it's just beautiful there.
Scott, thanks for sharing that. We're talking to travel writer and author Donnell Gay about her new book. It's called 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You can offer your own recommendation. You could second one that our guest has made so far. If you work in service or tourism, what have things looked like over the last couple of years during the pandemic? Have you made big changes? Are you seeing more people coming back? What is your favorite thing to take an out-of-town visitor to in your neck of the woods? What is something that's still on your list? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk now with Donnell Gay, Wisconsin-based travel writer and blogger. Her new book is called 100 things to do in Wisconsin before you die. She has 100, actually a lot more than 100, ideas, travel suggestions, places to go. And you could share yours too at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Back to your calls now. Connie is with us in Portage. Connie, hello.
Hi. I think everybody should visit, at least in the summertime, Mineral Point.
What do you like about Mineral Point, Connie? Where should we stop?
Well, I tell you, there used to be a lot of antique craft shops there now. But the main thing you want to go to is the village. And for the life of me, I can't think of the name of it right now.
Pendarvis.
And yes. And that was one of the first places. I was born in Darlington. But when I got older, and that was one of the places I went so many times all summer long. So just thought I'd share that.
I love it, Connie. Thanks for sharing that and sharing that memory with us, too. Danelle, Mineral Point area.
Yeah, Pendarvis. And it's nicest because that the Wisconsin Historical Society has changed up how they do the tours. So it's more of kind of like a history, less of the mining community, but more of like the history and the redevelopment and the restoration that they've done. And then you also have to make time to go to the Red Rooster Cafe and get yourself a pasty.
Ooh, I love a good pasty. Mm-hmm. I haven't been there yet. Interesting. Connie, thanks a lot for sharing that. Joy is with us now in West Bend. Joy, hello.
Hi. What was really wonderful for us was to go to the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. They have one or more cranes of every species from the world. The only one that's not endangered is... our sandhill cranes, which are coming back really strong. And they do work to save these cranes all over the world. And it's just beautiful to see them.
Joy, thanks so much. That is in the book, I know, Dana.
It is. There's 15 different kinds of cranes, and it's amazing the work that they're doing there.
And thanks for that call, Joy. This is the kind of thing you're looking for. Like, if you're not from Wisconsin, would you think, oh, yeah, Wisconsin, that's the place with the crane place?
No.
I doubt it. Right?
Right.
What other unexpected things are there like that that you came up with for your book or that you've seen that like, yeah, oh, you know, if you're from outside of Wisconsin, you wouldn't think we have blank cranes or Forevertrons or whatever.
There's so many fun things in the book. Like if you're in Washburn County, in Spooner, they have a railroad where you can ride the Mark Twain Zephyr. 10 shovel-nosed steamers were made in the mid-30s. 2 of them are in our museum. The other ones are lost to time. And this one has been refurbished. And so it's the only place in the world that you can ride one of these shovel-nosed steamers. And they're doing a fantastic job with the Mark Twain Zephyr. It's beautiful.
Fantastic. Only in Wisconsin. Joy, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Tim is with us next in Madison. Tim, hello.
Hi. I second the International Crane Foundation and the Red Rooster, but Copper Falls State Park, I think, is a state park that everyone should go to.
What? Paint us a picture, Tim. Go ahead and do it. Yeah,
it's northern Wisconsin. It's just south of Ashland.
Mm-hmm.
It's the beautiful Iron River, I think, runs through that. I believe that's the name of it anyway. But there's a beautiful path that goes across the river in a couple different places. You have beautiful vistas and beautiful old growth white pines and cedars there. I think everyone owes it to themselves to see it. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for sharing that. I kick myself. I haven't been. I love waterfalls. I've been in Wisconsin a long time. I've been to Ashland. I still haven't been to Copper Falls. Deno, you've got a few different parks of various sorts in the book. Where do you point us toward?
Oh, well, I do have several different parks in the book. I kind of balance them throughout the state. But my group of friends from the Midwest Travel Network, we have a new book coming out end of May, and it is Midwest State Park Adventures.
Uh-huh.
And so every single one of our 49 state parks is going to be represented in that book. So, yes, I've been all over the state parks. I love our state park system. The way that they handle everything is just beautiful.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Danelle Gay is with us. Her newest book is 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. You can keep sharing yours at 800-642-1234. Jim joins us next in Richland Center. Hi, Jim.
Yes, good afternoon. Down in Greene County, there's Nuglaris and Monroe. Monroe has cheese days every 2 years. It's a weekend event. They have a 3-hour parade each time. And also in Nuglaris, there's 3 events. There's a Heidi Festival, during the summer. There's Swiss Independence Celebration is the first weekend, I think, in August. And then their big deal is the Will and Tell Festival over Labor Day weekend. Any of those is worth seeing.
Jim, thanks for the call. New Glarus celebrating Wisconsin's Swiss heritage, Danelle.
The historic cheesemaking center down there, that's in the book. Absolutely fantastic. It's hard when you have a festival, especially every other year. But I love the heritage down there. And of course, Wisconsin cheese, I couldn't be prouder of that. I wear it on my head with 600 different kinds of cheese. And we have the largest amount of master cheesemakers than anywhere else in the world. It's an important area to visit.
Thanks a lot for that call, Jim, at 800-642-1234. So many festivals in the state, Danelle. I know that must have been one of the hardest things to sift and winnow, as we say here in Wisconsin. You've got, I think, some UFOs on the agenda for us, though, when it comes to festival season.
There's three different places in Wisconsin that has a UFO festival. And so I picked the one that's the oldest. But yes, definitely. When you have a week where you can celebrate UFO sightings, that's just a fun hoot.
And one thing I liked about the book, too, I mean, you've got, you know, one at a time, you're 100. But after that, you've got some a seasonal plan and then travel itineraries. Like, I think there's an art travel plan, things like that. Can you give us some inspiration on a plan, you know, a long weekend or a week off with some great things to do in Wisconsin?
Well, and it really depends. I had to try and break that down. So sometimes when you have kids or if you're empty nesters or if you just have like a long weekend. But yeah, breaking up seasonally and then giving you ideas and different things in the area. So like in Milwaukee, I would do a couple of different restaurants, talk about some of the museums like the Milwaukee Art Museum, the America Black Holocaust Museum, Mobcraft Brewery. Oh man, they are so fun. You have to get one of their pretzels that's like bigger than your head. And the names of the different beers are crowdfunded. So what they come up with, just it cracks me up. But try to do different things like that.
Let's bring another caller on. Mac is with us calling from Milwaukee. Mac, hello.
Hi. I was going to say Minocqua's Winter Park is a great place for people. It's one of the better it's probably the best place outside of mountain regions to cross-country ski in the United States for now. And climate change is really threatening a lot of places to cross-country ski, but they still have really reliable snow there.
Mac, thanks for the call. I know Minocqua makes an appearance in the book tonight. I don't remember if it was the winter skiing, though.
I don't think it was. I'm trying to remember myself now.
Okay.
Off the top of my head.
Well, but northern Wisconsin, we haven't said too much. Well, what am I talking about? Copper Falls and now the Winter Park. Any other great northern Wisconsin? We talked a lot about
Northern
Wisconsin.
Train I was talking about, Washburn County.
That's
very northwest. They have everything from the Canoe Heritage Museum to, I'm just trying to think of some of the other fun things there. Perlick Distillery, that's a lot of fun. Instead of farm to fork, like a lot of great places in Wisconsin, they're farm to cup. They make incredible vodka and have a fun tasting room with craft cocktails.
Thanks a lot for that call. In our last a little over a minute or so, now it's teasing us with some spring-like elements, you know, the rainy kinds anyway. What do you look forward to in spring in Wisconsin?
You know, our seasons are so beautiful. Our state parks, they're different every single season, so they're fun to get out and see just as, you know, the seasons change. But it's fun to just get back outside again and do a lot of things.
I've gotten better at doing winter state parks, especially with COVID. I got, you know, those chains for the shoes. You don't slip and slide all over the place. Do you get out in any of the winter parks? Is there a favorite?
We tried snowshoeing this year.
Oh,
that was
wow.
Fun.
Where'd you go?
Went to a couple of different things. Janesville has a nice area down there. In even Sun Prairie, Wisconsin was doing something fun where it was a snowshoe by candlelight hike. And I've learned that's a lot of work, more so than I thought it was. It was a good workout.
Okay. And speaking of workouts, you mentioned a huge, busy signing schedule. Where are your next couple events?
Oh my gosh, I'm a little all over. on April 3rd in Sun Prairie from 5 to 8 p.m., I'm at Salvatore's downtown Sun Prairie, and that's where we're officially kicking off the book, and all the profits that day go to the Sun Prairie Emergency Food Pantry. That's one of 45 so far that I have on my calendar, so if they go to travelingcheesehead.com/book-events, they can see my full calendar right now.
Awesome. Danelle, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Danelle Gay is a Wisconsin-based travel writer, blogger, and author. We talked to her today about her new book. It's called 100 Things to Do in Wisconsin Before You Die. Well, if you have more suggestions you want to share with the world, want to show off something in your neck of the woods in particular, you can keep doing it. Share your favorites on the Ideas Network Facebook page or send us an email, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, lakes are cold right now. What does that mean for dangerous cyanobacteria, also known as blue-green algae? Find out what the changing seasons mean for algae blooms. That's coming up tomorrow morning at 8:30 here on the Ideas Network. What is the very last thing you do before you go to bed at night? The Washington Post Department of Data looked at a big national survey of time use to check out our most common pre-bedtime activities. Third place is a near tie between reading or playing a computer game or otherwise using a computer screen. Then it's a big jump to second place, washing and grooming, including, you know, toothbrushing, that kind of thing. Number one, though, by a pretty big margin, the last thing we do before going to bed is watching TV. I've talked to sleep experts who say watching screens right before bed might interfere with our sleep, but between the 40% who watch TV, the 6% who said computers, a lot of people are still doing it. Now, me, I'm not sure how to answer the question. The last thing I do before I lay down is I brush my teeth, but I often read after going to bed until I get sleepy enough to drop the book. Sometimes I read big, heavy books. I got to be careful, or I drop it on myself, then I'm really awake. So maybe TV isn't so bad. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.